Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News, some of the most hard-hitting TV you're going to see anywhere. I'm your host, Rob Dew, and today is Thursday, May 24th, 2012, and here's a little look at what we have coming up.
Tonight, Rob Dew speaks with Norman Horn of Stop Austin Scanners about the fact that airport scanners don't even work and pose a risk to public health. Plus, Facebook sued and investigated how an IPO promoted to save the stock market was simply another insider scam. Then, vaccinations cause a mass exodus from Texas colleges. All that and more up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Let's get on to our top story tonight. Did you get zuckered out there? Did you cash in on the bonanza, the so-called bonanza that was flamed by the media, that was the Facebook IPO? Well, so did a lot of people, if you're one of those people out there. And in fact, Facebook shareholders sue company and its bankers over fishy IPO. That's coming out of Reuters. And some investors were shocked when lead underwriter Morgan Stanley reduced its revenue forecasts of the company shortly before Facebook's IPO, supposedly an amendment to its S-1 filing on May 9th over increased mobile risk. Now, did that news make it anywhere with all the Facebook news? That was the news that, well, just didn't make it out there for everybody to see. Isn't that convenient? Very convenient for everyone out there. Kurt Nemo writes as well, coming out today, irrational exuberance. Congress promises to review Facebook bankster scam. Like, we believe that. Just like they were going to review John Corzine and the dealings there. Just like every other banking scandal that comes and goes. All the banks that failed and that we had to prop up. Not one person got in trouble, save Bernie Madoff and maybe a couple other flies in the ointment. Insiders paid only 1.1% of the $38 offering price, remarkably low for an initial public offering, thanks to an underwriting discount arranged by Morgan Stanley. Facebook insiders who sold the offering not only got a high price for their shares, they got to keep an extraordinarily large portion of the proceeds, writes Alan Sloan. And so Kurt was linking to that in his article, which you can check out on InfoWars.com, Irrational Exuberance, Congress Promises to Review Facebook Bankster Scam. And Aaron Dykes and I worked a long time on that piece that he did a lot of work on, and I encouraged him. He said, you know, I think it looks like a pump and dump. And I said, you know what? It probably is a pump and dump. Let's go with it. We came out with that report where he was standing in front of the Facebook graphic, and, you know, we put that up many different forms on the Internet. But we're going to, I think, replay that again on Monday just so everybody can see that, you know, we're out there, we're watching the stuff, and we're watching the news, and we're reporting on the news that people aren't going to report on, especially the mainstream media. Moving on to another Zuckered, I guess. It's the people who believe, oh, there he is, our newest action villain, Osama bin Laden. Black Op Down, Hollywood jazzes up fake Osama raid for the children. That's by Saman Mohammadi, who's one of our contributors here. And here's a good quote. Judicial Watch has also sued the White House seeking documents showing the administration's collaboration with Hollywood filmmakers of the Hurt, including Hurt Locker director Catherine Bigelow and screenwriter Mark Boyle, who have been planning a big-budget studio film from Sony recounting the raid that killed bin Laden and oh-so-coincidentally scheduled for release in October 2012, just before the election. So we have our war hero president up there who's ordering the raid, and he's in that danger room photo. Oh, wait, that wasn't the Situation Room. That was all fake. That was just like a studio, just like a Hollywood production. But, you know, we believed it. We believed in our president who's there to help us with hope and change. Here's another great quote from Saman. The film will be terror propaganda on steroids. The magicians in Hollywood and their masters at the Pentagon are inventing reality for the big screen, transforming President Obama into a postmodern war hero. After the movie, people will go away thinking, not that the raid never happened, but even more brainwashed into buying the official story of bin Laden's death. Yeah, they shot this guy. He was holding guns on him. He was using one of his wives as a human shield. Oh, but then that never happened. But then there's the helicopter that blew up, but don't pay attention to that. Then we took his body and quickly flew it by helicopter over the sea and dumped it in there in a coffin in an unmarked area. No one's ever going to find it. Although there's a treasure hunter out there looking for it who's now afraid of his life, that he may be singled out by the Obama administration, maybe for one of those drone attacks. that we're going to have out there. We'll stay tuned to that. Meanwhile, this is a story that came out of Austin, and surprisingly, a very balanced piece, even though I think they shouldn't even show the other side of the story because it's been proven to be fraudulent. Fluoridated city water, is it worth the added expense? And that's out of KITV. And this report is definitely thanks to the work of a lot of the great patriots and activists at fluoridefreeaustin.com. But you won't find fluoride in his practice talking about Dr. Gent. After much research, Dr. Gent has concluded fluoride isn't the anti-cavity magic bullet taught in dental school. Instead of taught, they should say beaten, because that's definitely a form. In fact, I'm going to erase that right there. They implant that into the students' minds all the time, that fluoride's good for you, 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 fluoride's good for you. So if I say it enough times, you're going to believe me, right? Fluoride's good for you. It's good for your teeth. Oh, but if you drink it, your fluoride or your thyroid is going to get all messed up. Your bones are going to become brittle. It's going to embed in your pineal gland. It's crazy. We're going to go to a quick clip of that, and it coincides with I put Dr. Gent's comments and contrasted them with our current mayor, who's, you know, obviously a stooge for Agenda 21 and mass mind control, because he is definitely for the practice of fluoridation. Let's go to that clip now.
After much research, Dr. Gent has concluded fluoride is not the anti-cavity magic bullet taught in dental school. In fact, he believes it's bad for you.
It is a byproduct of fertilizer production, and it's contaminated with arsenic, lead, all sorts of bad stuff. And we put that in our water with the idea that it does reduce tooth decay.
A lot of people, including, I have to say, my dentist, believes that it's a very good thing to have fluoride in the water, and it's been a major factor in reducing tooth decay in children, especially.
It's a drug. It's being put in our water to act as a drug, but it's never gone through the proper FDA approval process to ensure that it is safe and effective.
So we have a educated professional and then an ignorant public servant, each showing you their side of the story. Now, I'm going to show you a clip here. This is 20 minutes of an over-hour piece we did with Dr. Connett, who's here in this studio. He's been here several times. He's spoken to that particular mayor and city council in Austin, telling them that this is an arcane practice. This is the equivalent of flat earth belief in water fluoridation. I don't care what the CDC says. They're paid off. Okay, the FDA has not approved this as a food byproduct. They haven't approved it, and they never will, because they know it causes cancer. They know there's all kind of problems associated with it. But through this weird loophole, we're getting it in our water every day here in Austin, Texas. So we're going to roll that Dr. Connett piece. And please show this to your uneducated, your dumbed down, your sleepy zombie friends, and maybe you can wake a few of them up. Let's roll the clip.
I think the most important thing to recognize about fluoride is that it's extremely toxic. It is very active biologically, interfering with many basic biochemical processes, enzymes, G-proteins, hydrogen bonds, and so on. So it shouldn't surprise us that there's a wide range of health effects that are attributed to fluoride. But the bottom line is that fluoride is extremely active biologically, that the first opponents of fluoridation going back to the 1950s were biochemists, including scientists like James Sumner, who won a Nobel Prize for enzyme chemistry. And incidentally, there is no doubt that fluoride damages health, because millions of people in India, China, and parts of Africa have had their health ruined by fluoride. The people have been crippled by fluoride and many other health effects. The argument, as far as fluoridation is concerned, is there an adequate margin of safety between the doses which cause this known harm, and incidentally documented in this report by the National Research Council, published in 2006, here in a fairly independent, balanced panel, looked at the literature for 3 years, and in this 507-page report and 1,100 references, indicated that the EPA safe drinking water standard for fluoridation, for fluoride, is 4 parts per million. It's not safe, it's not protective of health, and needs to be lowered. But before I get into the health effects, let me explain my first concern, which remains my top concern. The level of fluoride in mother's milk, mother's breast milk, baby's first meal, is extremely low. It's 0.004 parts per million. That means a bottle-fed baby in a fluoridated community in the United States, where we fluoridate the water at one part per million, is getting 250 times higher dose of fluoride than a breastfed baby. And that is extremely disturbing. This is a hazardous waste. No question about it. It's not only hexafluorosilicic acid, but it's a lot of crap that Neil was talking about. It's got lead and arsenic and mercury and radioactive isotopes, maybe trace amounts. They can't dump that into the sea by international law. They can't dump it locally because it's too concentrated. But wait for it. If someone buys it from them, you take away the label hazardous waste, and it becomes a product. And who's going to buy this stuff from them? Oh, our water department. So the water departments buy this hazardous waste, it becomes a product, and now they put it in our drinking water. And now, let me go through the list of health concerns. Some of them are more certain than others. Let me begin with the certain one. Dental fluorosis. Fluoride causes a discoloration, mottling of the tooth enamel. When this practice began in 1945, the promoters of fluoridation thought they could limit dental fluorosis to 10% of the children in its very mild form. And the very mild form has little specks of white, opaque patches on the cusp of the teeth, up to 25%. And they thought that only dentists would notice this, and was an acceptable trade-off with what they thought would be a lowering of tooth decay. Well, in November of 2010, the Center of Disease Control told us that children aged 12 to 15 in the United States, 41% of them now have dental fluorosis. And not only the very mild, but the mild, which impacts up to 50% of the tooth surface, moderate, which impacts up to 100% of the tooth surface, and severe, where you not only have the whole surface impacted, but indentations, chipping of the teeth, and so on. And 3.6% of children aged 12 to 15 in the United States have either moderate or severe dental fluorosis. So that trade-off between lowering tooth decay and producing dental fluorosis, but holding it only to 10%, clearly was a failure. We have four times more dental fluorosis as intended and as desired. Our attitude is that when you see this dental fluorosis, it means the child has been overexposed to fluoride, and the question is what other tissues have been affected. So let's start with the bone, because the teeth are a window into the bone. In fact, the teeth actually grow out of the jaw, the jawbone, and by the time the permanent teeth have come out, the jawbone has been loaded up with fluoride. And so if you can see the damage to the growing tooth cells, what did the fluoride do to the growing bone cells during this 8, 9, 10 period? In fact, the first study that was published on this in 55 indicated that the children in the fluoridated community, which was Newburgh, New York, had twice as much cortical bone defects as the children in the non-fluoridated community. Now, the cortical bone is the outside layer of the bone, and that's the layer, it's a lamellar structure, and that part of the bone is meant to protect against fractures. And so the concern then is whether we're increasing bone fractures in children. Well, we had to wait until 2001 before someone investigated this, and the researchers in Mexico found a correlation as the severity of dental fluorosis went up, meaning the amount of fluoride the child had been exposed to before the permanent teeth had erupted. As that went up, so did bone fractures in the children. And it was quite striking. When you go from no dental fluorosis to very mild dental fluorosis, it doubled. The bone fractures doubled. Very mild to mild, doubled again. Mild to moderate, doubled again. The next concern about bone is that the first symptoms of bone poisoning in an adult are just like arthritis, stiff joints, pains in the joints, pains in the bone. In the United States, we have one in three adults now with some form of arthritis. And if you ask a doctor what's causing it, they will say, well, we don't really know, but we think it's got something to do with aging. Well, what also parallels aging, of course, is the number of years you spent in a fluoridated community, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, eventually 60, 70, and so on. The next concern is as the fluoride continues to build up in the bone, and I should say that up to 50% of all the fluoride that we take in each day accumulates in the bone. The fluoride is bioaccumulative. The bones get more brittle. And another major concern is increased hip fractures in adults. A study is done in China, as documented in this National Research Council report, and we further elaborated in our book, The Case Against Fluoride, indicates that levels as low as 3 milligrams per day, that's 3 liters of fluoridated water per day, may increase hip fractures in the elderly. Now, my major concern is not the bones, although I think that's significant. My major concern is the brain, because when the baby is born, the blood-brain barrier is not fully formed. We think the blood-brain barrier keeps fluoride out of the brain most of the time, but for the first half year of the baby's life, the fluoride can get into the brain. And this is not the time, in my view, and the view of many other scientists, that a baby should be exposed to fluoride at 250 times the level in mother's milk. There have now been over 100 animal studies which shows that fluoride damages the brain. There have also been 23 IQ studies, most of them from China, but one from India, one from Iran, and one from Mexico, which show an association between moderate exposure to fluoride and lowered IQ in children. And I actually visited the villages where one of these studies was done. It was a very good study. They controlled for lead. They controlled for iodine. Most of the villages were almost the two villages were almost identical, except for the fact that their well water was different. And the author of this study estimated that the IQ would be lowered at 1.9 parts per million. And that offers no adequate margin of safety for children drinking water at 1 part per million when you consider the massive range of sensitivity to any toxic effect and the fact that once you put fluoride in the water, you can't control the dose. Another concern, which many of us have had for many years, is fluoride's impact on the thyroid gland. For between the 30s and the 50s, doctors in Argentina, France, and Germany were giving patients with hyperthyroidism, overactive thyroid gland, sodium fluoride tablets to lower thyroid function. And the doses that they were using were between 2.5 and 4.5 milligrams per day, which is exceeded by many people drinking fluoridated water. For example, the Institute of Medicine actually advises people to drink 3 liters of water a day. So clearly then they would be in the range for lowered thyroid function. And once again, as in many of these other issues, the fluoridating countries, including the United States, are simply not doing the studies. They're not investigating to see if there's a relationship between fluoridation and lowered IQ, fluoridation and arthritis, fluoridation and hypothyroidism. Key health studies have not been done in fluoridated countries. If you don't look, you don't find. They would like to imply, because they don't see anything, there's nothing wrong, but if they're not looking, they won't find. You often hear the promoters say things like, oh, we've been doing this for 60 years, if there's any problem, we would know about it by now. Oh, no, you wouldn't, unless you were doing the studies. Another issue that came out in 1997 was a researcher in England found that fluoride accumulated in the human pineal gland, and the pineal gland is a little gland between the two parts of the brain, the two hemispheres of the brain. It's not protected by the blood-brain barrier. It has a high perfusion rate of blood, and it also is a calcifying tissue like the teeth and the bones. And so this researcher hypothesized that fluoride would be attracted to this tissue, this little gland, like a magnet. And sure enough, when she investigated the average level of fluoride on these little calcium hydroxyapatite crystals was 9,000 parts per million, up to 21,000 parts per million, which means that this little gland has a higher concentration of fluoride than any other tissue in the body, including the bone. This researcher, Jennifer Luke, also did animal studies, and in the animal studies, she found that fluoride lowered the production of melatonin, the hormone that this little gland makes, and incidentally, it only makes it at night, the hormone of darkness. This pineal gland reacts to light. Descartes called it the seat of the soul. Not only did it lower melatonin levels in these animals, but also shorten the time to puberty, which is absolutely consistent. Melatonin is thought to act like a biological clock involved with timing of puberty, timing of aging, timing of jet lag and sleeping patterns and so on. Controls all kinds of things. And what they think happens that with the child at birth, the melatonin levels are high, and with childhood they gradually lower, and at a certain point the lowered melatonin levels trigger the production of the sex hormones, leading to puberty. Ironically, that first study that was published, which I already referred to in the bones, also recorded that the young girls in the fluoridated community, Newberg, were menstruating on average 5 months earlier than the young girls in the non-fluoridated community. Now, they didn't think that was significant at the time. Now, with Jennifer Luke's work, it is clearly takes on a new perspective. Kids now are reaching puberty 7, 8, 9. It has people very, very worried. But once again, the fluoridating countries have made absolutely no effort to reproduce Jennifer Luke's work. And it's not difficult. They could have done it easily. The Department of Health and Human Services has adopted to this, quote, sacred policy of fluoridation is to deny, critique the methodologies, but don't attempt to reproduce the studies. If you don't look, you don't find. And they're using the absence of study as if it was the same as the absence of harm, which is absolutely ridiculous, utterly irresponsible. So now they're giving every indication, particularly the Center of Disease Control that avidly promotes fluoridation around the United States and around the world for that matter, the impression that they give is that it's more important now to protect this practice than to protect the health of the American people and our babies and our children. It's almost as if the teeth have become the most important tissue, the most important organ in the body, instead of our brains, instead of our thyroid glands, instead of our pineal glands, instead of our kidneys.
There you go. So you can search on Prison Planet TV or on YouTube for the other Dr. Conant interviews and videos that we shot with him, and get them out to people you know, because it is time that we stop fluoridating our water. This is an arcane practice. This is like leaching and bloodletting. And we still do it, and we still promote it, and we let people promote it and put it in our water, and they use our tax money to do it. So let's stop it. Or let's at least get a hardcore scientific review of this practice, because it needs to stop. Moving on, Europe, are you ready for a bank holiday? We got Bilderberg members and former Bilderberg members calling for a bank holiday. In an article for the Financial Times entitled, "We Must Break Up the Failing Euro," former Bilderberg attendee Sir Martin Jacob concedes that all efforts to rescue the euro have been in vain, calling for all 17 members to decide at once to revert to national currencies. And that's in an article by Paul Joseph Watson called 5-Day Bank Holiday to Prepare for Collapse of Euro. Jacob is a former chairman of the Canary Wharf Group and argues that a 5-day bank holiday should be imposed to allow financial markets to absorb the shock of the collapse of the euro. So they're calling for it. The elites have said it's going to happen. Experience shows, he goes on, experience shows that currency breakups like devaluations have to be handled as to avoid anticipatory speculative activity. The essential requirement is a single unequivocal decision to revert to national currencies, reached confidently by all 17 governments and announced without prior notice, he writes. That's why you got people in Greece pulling their money out. Because they know what's going on. And you remember, we covered this in Aaron's piece yesterday and in Police State for the Rise of FEMA, that Etienne Davignon, the Bilderberg chairman, said back in, I think it was the late 90s or early 2000s, that back in the early 90s, they came up with the plan for the euro. And now they came up with the plan to destroy the euro. And they brought the euro together to bring all the European nations so they could control them all at once, with different ways of controlling the currency, putting in different laws. And these are all unelected members. They're all appointed by these various weird technocratic groups. Anyway, it goes on. Bilderberg chairman Etienne Davignon bragged that Bilderberg helped create the euro by first introducing the policy agenda for a single currency back in the early 90s, which was later formalized into the 1992 Maastricht Treaty. So you can read more about that in Paul Joseph Watson's article, 5-Day Bank Holiday to Prepare for the Collapse of Euro. The Greeks are preparing. They're pulling their money out. Let's see if news like this doesn't get the rest of the people in Europe pulling out their money, which would collapse the whole system, which wouldn't be a bad thing. Moving on to another local story that's going to have national implications. Revolt against vaccines leads to mass exodus from Texas colleges. Hundreds of classes canceled as ACC loses 10,000 students. And this has to do with a talk that Alex Jones had with an ACC administrator who said that over 10,000 students have refused to enroll because of their refusal to take inoculations. Although waivers for religious or personal objections are available, the ACC source said students were being given the impression that the inoculations were compulsory. This has led to a staggering 15% decline in students enrolling since January and forced ACC to cancel 500 classes over the next semester alone. This is out of this world, and I love it. I love seeing young people who are getting awake to the truth that they don't need to be taking vaccines. There's another that this is going to be a huge loss in revenue for the university. There's teachers that are going to get cut as a result of this. I mean, 500 classes? That is a lot of people that are going to be affected by this. But, you know, these students won't be going into debt that they probably can't pay off anyway because there won't be any jobs left for the degrees they're getting. So let's roll this graphic here of Austin Community College. There it is. Stop meningitis. It's going to get you. It's everywhere. Click on that link and it tells you how to get started. You must get this vaccine. Over to the right of the webpage, they do have a conscientious objection exemption. But what's happening is these kids, most of which are taught in the public school system, aren't thinking for themselves. They're not really going to the website. They're just talking to people at the office, and they're telling them, oh, yeah, it's required. You have to get this vaccine in order to enter school. And it says you're required if any of the following apply. They use all this language in there to make you think, you know, that you have to get this. And there it is, important. Meningitis vaccine. Texas law requires proof of bacterial meningitis vaccination or exemption request declining the vaccination 10 days before attending class. Learn more about it on their website. So I did some looking around. What's in the meningitis vaccine? Well, Natural News, they're reporting that it's made of brains in the hearts of cows, among other highly toxic components. I mean, you can't make it up. Alarmed, the Italian authorities have seized the vaccine because they thought it might be some sort of mutant variety that will turn, you know, mad cow over into humans. So pretty crazy stuff. So I went, you know, how many people die from bacterial meningitis? So I went to the CDC's website because they're, of course, the authority on everything. And they state there's about 4,100 cases a year with about 500 deaths a year between 2003 and 2007. And this is, you know, in college age kids is what they're basing that on. So I went to look up, well, we're worried about bacterial meningitis for these college kids. What about sports injuries? So did a little more looking in frequency of injury among college athletes. Well, there's about 380,000 male and female college athletes, and there's about 200,000 injury reports each year. That's about 53% of the people who play sports get injured. And then among that, 5,000 injuries per year compared to the 4,000 that you get with bacterial meningitis. Those are the cases. So maybe we should be banning or having people getting vaccinations against sports injuries. I bet Merck can come up with a vaccination for sports injuries. So there you go, Merck. I gave you a great idea. Let's come up with a vaccine for injured athletic students. And, you know, you could, that's 53% of all the athletes out there. That's a big market. Let's go to a quick piece that Darren McBreen did when he went down to, I think he went down to UT, and he did interview people on mandatory vaccinations. These are a lot of college students there, and it was funny. He said it, one lady started laughing at him hysterically when he started asking her about vaccines. So obviously a brainwashed zombie. You got to move on and find the people that are awake. So let's roll that clip.
It'd be mandatory that all students who attend school be vaccinated.
That I'm not sure. I would say yes.
I would think it's a good thing, but mandatory, I guess that could like violate some people's rights.
No, it shouldn't be mandatory for students to have vaccinations in order to attend public school.
No, I don't think it should be mandatory to get vaccinated before attending college.
I do believe they should be vaccinated.
Yeah, I think it should be voluntary.
And tell us about, you said your sister chooses not to.
Yeah, she's in Portland, Oregon. She has three kids, so she chooses not to vaccinate. And she actually, like, actively fights against not vaccinating children, not having it as a requirement.
I think it's always everyone's decision, though. I don't think you can force anyone to get vaccinated.
Vaccines, I don't trust them. I don't get my flu vaccine.
Interesting development in California. They just passed a bill legalizing children consent for vaccines, if you could believe it. So 12 years old and above, they can actually consent to vaccinations for Gardasil and hepatitis B. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's a bit early in life to be putting this decision on kids.
I don't think minors have the ability to make these decisions. It's up to the parents.
Well, I think children over the age of 12 probably don't have all the mental facilities to make a decision like that on their own.
12 seems a little young. I don't know how you can make an informed decision when you're 12. Like, I don't even think I would know anything about vaccinations when I was 12, so.
Well, they don't let kids do anything else without parental knowledge. Why would they do that? I mean, that's ridiculous. Parents are responsible for their children.
It should definitely be the parents' choice over the students.
Totally the parents' decision what they do with their children, where they go to school, and what vaccinations they get.
Do you think that any of the vaccines pose a risk?
Potentially, yes.
Starting January 1st, California minors as young as 12 years old have the right to get preventative treatment for sexually transmitted diseases without parental permission. That includes the HPV vaccines, Gardasil, and Cervix, which help prevent many strains of cervical cancer.
A group of children are going to go to school who've not had the vaccine, and they are going to be shown a film. And they tell you, children, we're just going to show you this film, and they don't tell them it's sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry, but they will show them a film, and it will show the horrors of cervical cancer. And those children will be frightened, deliberately frightened, into getting the vaccine. Don't tell your parents, kids, but you get this vaccine, because this is going to happen to you if you don't get it.
This is a $50 billion a year industry, and it's time that we expose what these merchants of death are doing. Their vaccines don't work, and they've been linked to killing people and maiming others.
Big Pharma, obviously, they're making billions of dollars, so do they have an incentive to push these on the people?
Oh, yeah. This is all big business.
More money.
Yeah.
I have my suspicions about pharmaceutical companies influencing political, you know, the same political sway, bills being passed to force people to get vaccines.
Every piece of information that is in accordance with that vaccine, side effects, I mean, the good side effects and the bad side effects, everything should be made public or available to the patient so they know what they're getting themselves into.
I would say do actual research into the drugs instead of hearsay.
You know, you can't force anyone to do anything that they don't want to do. So at the end of the day, I don't think you should be forcing that at all.
Let's move on. Here's a little good news story. Sanford judge rules in favor of motorists who flashed headlights. And this is a practice that I don't really notice much in the South, but when I lived up in Pennsylvania, everywhere there was a speed trap. The cops come, or the cars coming the other direction were always flashing you. They were letting you know, hey, slow down. The boys in blue are up ahead and they're handing out tickets left and right. Well, the Orlando Sentinel is reporting a judge in Sanford ruled Tuesday that a Lake Mary man was lawfully exercising his First Amendment rights when he flashed his headlights to warn neighbors that a deputy had set up a speed trap nearby. Circuit Judge Alan Dickey earlier ruled that state law does not apply to people who did what Kittner did and use his headlights to communicate. Basically, that's all he did. It's a form of Morse code. On Tuesday, the judge went a step further, saying people who flash their headlights to communicate are engaging in behavior protected by the U.S. Constitution. So give Circuit Judge Alan Dickey an award for standing up for the little guy and not allowing this to happen. There's a case in Austin. There was a guy who actually carried a sign when they would put up these speed traps along the interstate. And he got ticketed for that, and he fought it and won in court. And then he went to wearing a T-shirt that said, you know, speed trap ahead. And he's beat the city several times in lawsuits. So just a word to the wise out there. You know, if people flash their headlights to warn them, that's just tough luck for you. You've got plenty of people out there that'll go in and pay their ticket. Me, myself, when I get a ticket, I fight it every time. I don't care if I win or lose. My job is to get in there and be a cog into the system and hopefully help run it into the ground, because it's a total biased BS system anyway, and it doesn't even apply to us because we're not commercial drivers. And that's what the whole code of driving is going for. It's for people who are commercial drivers, not for people who are traveling in their conveyances. Look that up. Final story tonight out of the Daily Mail. Will I Am. Instead of saying that, oh, the irony, it's just that, oh, the hypocrisy. Voice judge Will I Am turns up a climate change debate in huge gas-guzzling helicopter. And there's photos of him sitting. It's a big helicopter. There he is, you know, going to speak. His trip to London was a total of 286 miles, used 71.5 gallons of fuel, plowing 0.75 tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. Oh, Will I Am, you're a horrible person, which is the same an average UK person produces in an entire month. Despite the highly polluting journey to the university, speaking at the talk, the star said, climate change should be a thing that we're all worried and concerned about as humans on this planet. How we affect the planet, our consumption, and how we treat the place that we live. You know what? I don't have a problem with him flying in a helicopter. I think it's pretty cool. I want to be a helicopter pilot. But I think it's hypocritical for him to talk about the climate change and all that other stuff and global warming or global cooling or whatever, however they want to package it. But then he's flying around in a helicopter, pumping out CO2 like it's nobody's business. It's hypocritical. Well, I am just... come forward and say you don't believe in the hype and that it is a bunch of BS and that you're either being paid or bought off somehow in order to produce that. Or what they're doing is, you know, helping you further your career as, what, one of the members of the Black Eyed Peas? Is that what he is? All right. That's the news, and we got one more. It's our daily quote, and it's from Victor Hugo. All the forces in the world are not so powerful as an idea whose time has come. And that idea is liberty and freedom, and that's what we preach here on the InfoWars Nightly News. We'll be back in a moment with an interview with another freedom fighter out there. His name is Norman Horn, and he's with StopAustinScanners.org, and he's going to be telling us why he got involved in it and the dangers of scanners and why we should be opposing this. Now, if you're not a member yet, if you haven't started a profile, we have a new free social network that we started called Prison. PlanetInfoWars.com. I'm still used to promoting PrisonPlanet.tv, which you should still be a member of, but Prison or PlanetInfoWars.com, there it is. I'm going to say it one more time. PlanetInfoWars.com. Start your profile today. Meet other like-minded people. Start groups. Let's take it to the next level. Let's start being our own InfoWarriors. Be your own activists. This is a place where you can promote your own events, your own things, anything you want to do. We get a lot of emails, and we can't promote everybody's event on the website. There's simply not enough room. But here's a place where other patriots are going to be going. Other patriots are going to be getting their friends into it. And let's get rid of our Facebook profiles and start our Planet InfoWars profiles. And let's help take back America, because it's time. The time is now. You are the change you need to see in the world. Be the change you can see in the world, as that Gandhi quote is that I just hacked up. But anyway, that's our news for tonight. We'll be back with the interview right after this break. Stay tuned.
Have you been to InfoWarsShop.com lately? Express your inner patriot with these brand new InfoWars t-shirts. Say it loud with the InfoWars bullhorn shirt, or educate the sheeple with the Bill of Rights shirt. Grope the public's mind with the TSA shirt. And with this shirt, you can let the dark side know of the Rebel Alliance's power. All available at InfoWarsShop.com.
For more than 6 years, I've talked on the air about creating a social network. PlanetInfoWars.com is in its beta phase. We're just launching, and I want to invite all of you out there to be in on the ground level. Planet InfoWars is about people coming together, forming activist organizations, getting involved politically, hunting and fishing, gardening, dating. This is a place for people who love freedom to meet and to talk and to write and to post information. And I give you this pledge. We are not going to spy on you and sell your data to the New World Order. PlanetInfoWars.com is free, so people who love freedom can get together. Connect with people who are awake and know what we're facing. Be active. Organize. Take action. Go viral. Create. Contribute. Resist. Because resistance is victory. You are victory. It's waiting for you to breathe power into it. PlanetInfoWars.com. Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure. And it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
We are back on one of the most hard-hitting news programs in America. It's InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Very happy to be here spreading the word about liberty and freedom to all the people out there. Don't forget, we got our beta test of Planet InfoWars. And this is the interview portion of our show, and we have with us, not in studio, but via Skype, Norman Horn. He's a chemical engineer, and he has a PhD in chemical engineering from the University of Texas. And he was just another guy like you and me out there, got fed up with these body scanners. He started StopAustinScanners.org, and he is with us via Skype. Norman, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing, sir?
I am always feeling good when I'm fighting tyranny in the New World Order. So, tell us about Stop Austin Scanners. Why did you start it, and why should people even be concerned about these scanners for the people who've been under a rock for the last year and a half, 2 years that we've been fighting this?
Well, Stop Austin Scanners was a project of a few friends of mine and I back when we began to start up this whole legislative effort to try and take on the TSA in the state of Texas. And early on in, I guess you would say late 2010, after David Simpson was elected, there was some talk about, what we might be able to do in order to, just take on the TSA and see if we could get these scanners and pat downs just removed from our airports, here. And so once David entered into the legislature, we filed these bills. Stop Austin Scanners was kind of part of the background of that. And it was it became a tool with which we could use, we could inform people about the various health hazards that these scanners pose, why they were also an invasion of privacy and were unconstitutional, and then also give people a means of taking action to affect their legislators from a local level. And it was a very successful project during its heyday. In fact, David Simpson once said that he felt that it was probably one of the biggest reasons why the bills gained so much support in the legislature so quickly for someone who really was, a freshman representative at the time. And we can talk about how we did that in the future. I guess I should just mention that part of the reason it was so successful, what sort of things we allow you to do with that website in order to take action? Well, we created a system whereby you could email in one fell swoop every single representative and every senator, the lieutenant governor, the governor, and all their transportation aides all in one fell swoop. It took you one email basically to get to everybody.
That's
and
the
you
power.
Could submit that through our site, and we sent over 30,000 emails to various people in the state legislature over the course of just a few months.
Wow. That is the power of the people's internet when they decide to take action. I like that. I like that a lot. So, you know, why should people be concerned about these scanners? I know there's two different types. I've been studying this issue since the underwear bomber incident when they started pushing this stuff.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That I put in a film that I co-directed with Alex called Police State 4, The Rise of Tyranny. And we documented that that case was a false flag from top to bottom and that it was only put there. And that guy was put on the plane in order to cause this to happen, to bring it for to create the public pressure to bring in body scanners, yeah, to make people, you know, have the appearance of safety. But let's go into some of the dangers of these. Tell us about the two different types of scanners.
Sure. Well, yeah, there are two different types of scanners. They use two different types of technology. The first type is what we use is what you'd call ionizing radiation in order to basically bounce light off your body in order to create this image. And both of them do that, but in different types of ways. The first one, again, it uses ionizing radiation, and that is X-rays. The X-ray machine is built by L3 Communications, and it's an interesting device in and of itself, because as opposed to traditional X-ray machines, which use hard X-rays in order to image your bones, so the different densities of your body tissues cause, you know, either the rays to be reflected in different ways. And so where rays are not hitting the film, you get an image of your bone structure, things like that, or other hard-type substances in your body. It typically passes through tissues otherwise. Now, there's a big difference between what you would do in, say, your doctor's office when you get an X-ray of your bones or an external structure that's been lodged in your body or something like that, versus what they're using in these scanners on the airports. Instead of using hard X-rays, most of which pass through your body and a few are reflected off the bones, which is what creates that image, or the lack of those rays is what helps create that image. Soft X-rays only penetrate very, you know, and into a very thin region of your external tissues. Now, as a result of this, even though the energies of those X-rays are close to the same as what you get in a doctor's office, because they don't penetrate very far and they are mostly bouncing, all of them, in fact, are not passing through you. They're actually mostly bouncing off you. You have a much greater risk of exposure and absorbance of those X-rays. So what this is they say, oh, well, it's like getting one normal X-ray from a doctor's office. It's really not. It actually could potentially be a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that they really haven't studied what the long-term effects of these types of X-rays would be. The DHS has really been sketchy and evasive on what sorts of studies they have done and the things they even do talk about. They're not very representative of what actually is happening. There's a lot of questions that would need to be answered. So before we even, you know, attack on the privacy issues and constitutional issues, you know, a whole lot, but they've also been really evasive when it comes to just the health issues. And that's just for the X-ray scanners.
Right.
Now, the other type of scanners, which is made by RapeScan, which I think is kind of ironic, RapeScan. But anyway, they make a different type of scanner that's primarily based on radio waves and terahertz waves. So all of these types of waves are light. They're all part of the electromagnetic spectrum, but they're in different regions. These radio waves are actually really in the microwave region, the kind of boundary, they're kind of in that boundary area where you define, okay, that's radio, that's microwave. It's kind of in the in-between right there. The terahertz waves are another story. Now, radio waves themselves, well, they're kind of, there's not a whole lot of information out there to really understand, like, what are the long-term effects of those. But what I really should be concerning about that are those terahertz waves. There is evidence in the scientific literature that suggests that terahertz waves have the ability to cause resonance in strands of DNA and can basically shatter it, much like a singer who has a very powerful voice can sing a really high note and shatter a piece of glass in front of them, like a glass that, you know, which you might hold water in or something like that.
Right, right. And I believe you're referencing an MIT study. That came out in, I believe, 2008 or 9, because I read that same study and they said, you know, it's the resonant effects of these terahertz waves are unknown, but that they could actually resonate with the DNA, causing it to unzip and mutate, essentially.
So, yeah, what MIT showed was through some complex theoretical measurements, they said there is potential here for really weird stuff to happen. And what was really concerning is that the government basically circumvented all the safeguards that were in place by OSHA and the like in order to prevent those sorts of things from entering into the public square without proper vetting. And so it may be that it is potentially harmless. I doubt it. I can't imagine why this, there's a, you know, there are too many things going on here for me to be really confident in their health and safety. But even if they were, there would be other issues involved. But the fact is that they have been invasive. They have lied. They have not been upfront about the issues that they have studied. The things that they have done have not been representative of real concrete studies that give us real data. And they're foisting this upon us in a way that is completely uncomfortable and abridges all of our, you know, fundamental rights from the Fourth Amendment to be secure in our person from search and seizure. So, you know, there's a lot of health issues. There's a lot of privacy issues and constitutional issues. Besides the fact that, you know, everybody who I know of, well, I shouldn't say that may be a bit of extreme to say, but there are a lot of independent sources who've said that these scanners wouldn't have prevented the underwear bomber. So even the reason why they wanted to implement these in the first place was, you know, that wouldn't have caught him. Some experts in security fields from other countries have said, we're not going to use this. It's not reliable. A lot of Germany has completely rejected them. In fact, there's 13 other countries that have said, we are not going to use these scanners because we don't think they're reliable, including Germany and Israel and a number of other places. So there's not even really a good security reason to be using them anyway.
Right.
So why are they being used? It's a good question. I would say that it's still an open debate there, but I mean, there's a lot of issues. I would say follow the money. I think there's probably a lot of graft going on. There's a lot of corruption. It certainly is enriching the pockets of L3 and Rapiscan. And it's an awful thing that this is what we're now getting to with our, you know, abridging of our constitutional rights here in this country.
Right. These things have not been vetted properly. There's definitely payoffs being made. You know, we all know Chertoff has connections with these things, and he was out there promoting them day one. You know, we need these scanners. They were kind of on the back burner because people didn't think we really needed them. We've seen John Corbett, who sewed a pocket into the side of his shirt and got a little metal plate through. You know, so these things aren't. Yeah. I mean, a guy with simple home ec skills can defeat these so-called security systems.
That's right.
And on top of that, you have to deal with the TSA goons who, if you don't want to go through their microwave scanners, then they want to, put their hands all over your body, which is a whole nother gross violation. And it's disgusting. And they're attacking the portion of our population who's actually helping the economy, the people who travel on vacation, the people who travel for work. What you're going to see is less of this. We've already seen it. We've seen, you know, American Airlines is about to file for bankruptcy. This has a lot of implications, and all this is paying off one small group of these, you know, body scanner manufacturers. These guys are getting the money. Somebody's getting the payoffs, and now TSA wants more money. They want to actually go in. The Democrats want to double the travel fee. And this is all in the name of stopping Al-Qaeda, and it doesn't work. We all know it doesn't work. It's total horse manure.
Yeah, and it's absolutely the case. And this has major economic ramifications for all of us. As you've already noted, you know, airlines have been really hurting, since they basically have ceded, especially in recent years, past 10 years, the all security, responsibilities over to the TSA. And the TSA is looking to expand, as you've already noted. They're not just looking for airports anymore. They're looking to go into bus stations. They're looking to go to train stations. And, you know, by golly, I know in Tennessee, they're doing, you know, x-ray scans of passing trucks. Instead of just getting a radar detector in order to set up speed traps, they're going to be scanning you from the road. And I mean, this is really out of line. And that is not, you know, a way for a country to treat its citizens. I mean, we are essentially, by walking through an airport, we are presumed guilty until proven innocent.
All that's ridiculous unless you're post-World War II East Germany or the USSR after World War II. That's how they treated their citizens.
These are fundamental human rights. It's not just us. I mean, if the United States is supposed to be an example of liberty, and we haven't been that for who knows how long at this point. But even if we were, this is not a good way of promoting our values, right?
Right.
If we're supposed to be a land where we're supposed to be free, if you're not secure in your person and from search and seizure that are unwarranted, that are not without probable cause, this is a big problem. And I think people are really picking up on that. I mean, part of the reason that we really got involved heavily in Austin with David Simpson's legislation is that we kind of saw this convergence of multiple things at once. You know, picking an issue that not just, a few liberty-minded people care about, but that, hey, there's a lot of people on the other side who don't share most of our values. They care about it too. We can bring them in and we can share our values with them by creating value with them.
Sure.
So we bring them in and we say, hey, let's work together. So it's amazing how, our efforts, if you go to Stop Austin Scanners, you can see a lot of the groups that signed on basically to this mission of taking down the TSA in Texas. And when you can bring together, the Travis County Libertarian Party and the Travis County Republican Party and the ACLU and changeaustin.org, I may be misquoting here. I've been talking about Change Austin recently, but, when you can get all these different groups together who do have different ideologies and you can get them together on this simple issue and say, look, enough is enough. We've got to do something. That's a significant thing, and it means you're on the right track, I think.
It is, and I think we showed our power. It was last year, I don't remember the exact month, but Alex was on the air. He called for a spontaneous protest at the Capitol, and we had at least 200 people show up. And sure. Within 3 hours, he got off the air at 2. At 5 o'clock, we were there, and we went through those halls hooting and hollering, telling these people we weren't going to take it. We didn't like it. Our voice was heard. They still... using David Dewhurst, the CIA agent who's now running for U.S. Senator out of Texas. He's now he helped kill that bill, even though he claimed he didn't. Perry really didn't want it. He acted like he did. And we all know he's just a con artist as well. And these guys are working behind the scenes to kill this stuff under, threats from the national government, which we should be saying, hey, start a blockade. See what's going to happen. You're not going to blockade us. We have the right to travel. And you can't stop that. And we have to start, asserting ourselves to these people to let them know that, and it's happening. It's slowly happening. Rand Paul's starting a Stop the TSA movement, which is, part of the body scanner thing. It's a whole nother issue, of the groping, but it works hand in hand. They put those in there, I think, to try to see if they could go along with it. They're just trying to push it incrementally. Oh, here. Now we have to, bring you in the back room and put on the rubber glove, because that's the only way that we can keep you safe from Al Qaeda is to make sure every part of you is clean. You probably saw the South Park episode with the TSA.
Actually, I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it. I kind of want to, though.
Let me tell you, I don't watch a lot of South Park, just cause I don't have time, but that episode hit the nail on the head. The Toilet Security Administration. what's next in your fight? When are we going to see more legislation in Texas to combat these scanners?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would, kind of following up on what you were previously saying, like, what can you do now? It is actually pretty simple. Keep educating the people about the hazards of these systems. Try to get people to persuade them to not go through these systems. Opt out as much as you can. If you're going to travel and you're going to go through an airport, just opt out. It's for your own safety, believe me. And as best you can, I know it's really uncomfortable getting felt up by these morons. It's ridiculous that they would do that. But when they do, tell them things like, I'm really sorry. Tell the TSA, just be nice to them at least. There, some of them, some of them really do dislike what they are doing.
I think a lot of them like what they're doing. I think it's pretty, I've been through that.
It's true, but I've also definitely been, I've seen people who really dislike what's going on, but make them feel a little nervous. Say things like, I'm really sorry that you have to do that. This is what's required of you for this kind of job. Or say, I really pray to God that you get a new job as quickly as possible. Things that make them feel even more uncomfortable, and maybe they'll start thinking about their, what they're doing even more. Because, you know, look, if it comes from the ground up, things are going to happen. So that's the first thing, you know, make sure that if you travel, keep opting out, stay away from those scanners. They're not good for your body. As uncomfortable as it is to get felt up, it's better than, you know, the types of health risks that can be, you know, at your doorstep if you start going through the scanners too much. So the second thing is, you know, in Texas, we have very short legislative sessions and very short tenures for legislators. David Simpson is up for reelection in 2011. I'm sure you guys can't necessarily endorse him, but I can. And so I hope that if you're, you know, interested in these sorts of things, take a look at his campaign and see what you think. If you like what he stands for, then maybe consider helping him out. We're going to be trying, if he's reelected, to get this stuff back in motion. And I know that he's committed to bringing this forward in the legislature once again in 2013, when the session starts, and assuming he's reelected. In fact, it's looking pretty good because his constituents pretty much love him, and his opponent in the Texas primary, I think it's this weekend, is kind of a scuzzbucket and a liar and a cheat. So I think he's got a really good chance. In the primary especially. I'm excited that he could be coming back. He's a great man. I really appreciate him very much. I've had a lot of time to talk with him. Supporting him is totally worthwhile. And then finally, just keep track of, you know, TSA watchdog sites like TSAtyranny.com, and then, of course, Stop Austin Scanners. Mm-hmm. Look for Rand Paul's ramping up of his campaign against the TSA, although I would say the most important thing we can do at this point is going towards sort of nullification type efforts from the state level. I think that is a great way of fighting back against the feds. And on this issue, it may become, you know, I really think this could be a spark of something bigger for issues that are not the TSA. Obviously, the federal government has overextended its bounds in pretty much every possible way. And we who are liberty-minded have to always be looking for ways to unite people together in common issues and get people to realize that, you know, liberty is better than tyranny. Duh. And so stuff like the TSA can be an ignition point for all sorts of different stuff. And so I just urge you, you know, if you're in Texas, get involved here with the efforts. Pay attention to what's going on. You know, if we get David Simpson back, we're going to be, you know, think about it like this. You know, last session, it took a corrupt governor, a corrupt lieutenant governor, a corrupt speaker of the House, and the entire Department of Justice to shut us down.
Right, right.
We're going to come back, and we're going to be twice as strong. They're going to have to pull out all the stops next time. Mark my words, we're going to make them pay.
Yeah, I totally agree. The time is now. This is a movement that anybody can get involved with, and it reaches everywhere. Everybody is affected by these things. So Norman Horn, stopaustinscanners.org. Thanks for joining us. You have a great day.
Thank you, sir. It's great being with you.
All right. And that's our show for today. Remember, you can get involved. You can do, you know, Norman was just a guy who got sick and tired of going through these scanners and looking at them and studied up on them and saw that the government wasn't telling the truth. We know that. They lie about everything. Anytime they tell you it's for your own good, they're lying to you. Just remember that. Just even if you don't think they're lying to you, just think, well, they're probably lying to me at this point. So keep that in mind. We launched Prison Planet or PlanetInfoWars.com this week. It's our social network. Get on there. I've got to get on and get my little, I don't even know what they call these things. What are they called when you join these activism sites? My little page, my profile. So I got to make my profile. I'll be on there and I'll be talking as much as I can. I am pretty busy running the news and other things here in the office, but I love doing it. I love being a part of the info war. And please consider supporting us if you're watching this on YouTube. You can become a PrisonPlanet.tv member. One thing that I think is amazing is that we have an archive of every nightly news show we have done since September. We started this, and you could go back and watch any show. You could read about the description of the show. It tells you what's going on. I mean, look at that. It's just a treasure trove of information. So it's really good. That's a tool for you to use. You can do what you need with those. If you're a member, spread the word about the broadcast. Spread the word about liberty. You know, if you see somebody doing something not liberty-minded, say, hey, man, think liberty-minded. What's going on here? Let's wake up. Let's stop being slaves. That's all I have to say today. I will see you guys next time. I guess I'll see you on the flip side. This is Rob Dew for InfoWars Nightly News. Good night.